it is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker, Linda from Los Osos.
I brought some reading materials in case I go blank. Sort of hitting an age where I start doing that. I'm Linda West, and I'm an alcoholic. Live in Los Osos, California. We just moved out there about a year ago, so it's kind of new also. I'm a grateful alcoholic, and I've recovered from a hopeless, seemingly hopeless state of mind and body because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really like the thing about being self-supporting, that reminder, the way that we participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. We make coffee and we're greeters and we clean up and we do those things. And when we do them, the meeting becomes ours. I become a part of, and that's really important. I was taught that when I came in. You know, before I get, I'm nervous. I haven't talked really at like speaker. I come from a small town in Colorado. We didn't have a lot of speaker meetings. It's been a while. I definitely am not your, I don't have a story, you know. We'll see what comes out. But I do like this thing. It's in the Daily Reflections on January 21st. And because my hope is that tonight what I share is about the hope that Alcoholics Anonymous offers and not about my own self-consciousness, you know. So this is serving my brother. The member talks to the newcomer, not in a spirit of power, but in a spirit of humility and weakness. And that's from our literature, Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, page 279. As the days pass in AA, I ask God to guide my thoughts and words that I speak. In this labor of continuous participation in the fellowship, I have numerous opportunities to speak. So I frequently ask God to help me watch over my thoughts and my words, that they may be true and proper reflections of our program, to focus my aspirations once again to seek his guidance, to help me be truly kind and loving, helpful and healing, yet always filled with humility and free from any trace of arrogance. So, in front of all of you, that's what I'm asking. I think it kind of helps when you're talking, you know, we have that format about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and I do think that's a great, helps people get started. So what it was like, I think I was born alcoholic, and I can remember from a pretty early age, I had a terrible self-consciousness. I reacted to a lot of things in my life with shame. I can remember in grammar school going to a friend's birthday party, and all the girls got in a circle, and we were supposed to get up one at a time and dance in the middle. And I bent over and said I was sick and left the party. You know, so that's where I come from, like that kind of I'll leave the party. I did not know how to participate in life without some kind of help. I started drinking pretty young, 13, not that young for a lot of people. Drank the first time, blacked out, threw up spaghetti dinner all over my girlfriend's bedroom floor. I remember consciously registering. There were no consequences. The parents didn't say anything, whatever. It was like we were invisible, and I couldn't wait to do it again. By the time I was 15, I mean, I was drinking, taking, you know, screwdrivers and red wine to school in my thermos. And I was also, I don't want, this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to respect it because Alcoholics Anonymous is what saved my life. I hit my bottoms from heroin, and so I have to talk about that a little bit in here. By the time I was 15, I had sought out the guy that in our group that I knew shot heroin because, like, I had a big hole and I needed more. I took alcohol, I took any drugs I could come across, and I went straight for that. It was a great solution for a while, you know, and I had a job after school. The people there let me drink. I could go to the liquor store next door or the wine store across the street and buy alcohol for us to drink after work. And I got pretty good grades. I looked like this kind of square, you know. Like, I got a job, I'm getting good grades, nobody could say anything, right? Nobody could say about anything about what else I was doing. When I was 16, I was put in my first rehab, and that was at Norwalk State Hospital. It was, I don't know if it was even a rehab. You know, we did all this stuff there, and they did games, like I think the Synanon structure, and you wore cardboard signs and state clothes and shaved the boys' heads and all that stuff. And I lived there for 10 months. I graduated from high school while I was there. When I got there, I had hepatitis. I was going through withdrawals, you know, had my birthday in that rehab and did whatever they said to do. But they didn't have a living program like we have. We're so lucky that this is, my sobriety date is October 7th, 1984. I've been coming here for quite a while. You know, but I left that program with no tools, no living, you know, like I was supposed to be fixed, I guess. And didn't go so well. I tried to stay away from heroin, just do that a little bit here and there. And I love in chapters, you know, where it talks about all the methods we tried to control and enjoy. Really, it was all the methods I tried to be able to function in the world and be okay, you know. And so fast forward, you know, it's... I didn't hear any mention of alcoholism. I didn't hear anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. But I heard something in that program that ended up, I think, saving my life later. One of the guys, and they had an adult program, and they did panels for the juveniles. And one of the guys there said, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're just going to end up over here in the adult program in jail or dead. Right? So, that proved really useful later, you know, but not yet. So I did a lot of geographics, ended up on Maui looking for the simple life, found a local man that I thought was going to give it to me. You know, we're going to be good now. Got pregnant, had twins. Those twins probably saved my life because I really didn't give a shit about myself. You know, I OD'd a lot. I can remember when I was 15, OD'ing, waking up in the bathroom, in the bathtub wet. They got me breathing again. The house was empty. So they got me breathing again and left to get more drugs, right? Like, that's the kind of people I was hanging out with when I was 15. And I can remember thinking, so what if I wake up, I use again? And if I don't wake up, who cares, you know? So those babies were 39 years old today, or this year, right? They're like grown-ass adults with families of their own that I get to participate in, you know. Really, I think, saved my life, you know. I wanted to be a good mom, but alcohol was running my show, you know. It dictated what kind of person I was, what kind of mom I was. I couldn't sit still and read them a bedtime story without taking something first to settle me down. The marriage I was in over there was, we were both alcoholics, had violence, the police at the house, all that stuff that goes with alcoholism. And I ended up leaving him and coming back to the mainland, and which was, I ended up getting sober in Southern California, right in the area I grew up, you know, and all this time I was sure it was that I could never live there. It was South Bay, you know, like that's the problem, right? And that's where I ended up getting sober. I started using heroin again, and I used it one time just like I'd used it a few times through the years, and it had me again. It was like the obsession was on, and ended up with pneumonia and hepatitis and in another rehab, you know. When I got in that rehab, they do an intake. Like, first of all, I went to the rehab like with a bunch of Valiums in my pocket. Like, I just wanted them to fix me. I'm still on medical leave from the hepatitis and the pneumonia. Like, just fix me up and send me on my way, you know. So I had no idea. I hadn't really even heard about alcoholism yet. I didn't connect alcohol to what my problem was. I just was using alcohol to fix me. It was my solution, you know. It allowed me to be safe, and it allowed me to connect to people, both. So I talked to this psychiatrist and started convincing him that really I was mentally ill, better than being an alcoholic, right? So, you know, and by the end of the conversation, the smart man said, maybe you are. Maybe that is what's wrong with you, you know. And there was something in there, grace of God, something there, that realized I was making a huge choice in that moment. I was either going to be mentally ill and not responsible for myself and stay on that merry-go-round that I'd been on for a long time, or I was going to take responsibility. So I'm very grateful that I said, no, maybe I'm an alcoholic, you know. God, there's like so many things that happen. I was ready to, I'm kind of a depressive. I've struggled with that all through my sobriety, and have finally made friends with, like, I am who I am, you know, and I'm not supposed to look. I have a friend named Mindy in Colorado who is, like, really optimistic and always smiling, and I would judge myself against her all the time, right? I'm just who I am, you know. Let's see here. I ended up, they were going to kick me out of the program because I'd used heroin again. And it was a program for alcoholics. And they saw that I was serious, and they let me stay in the psych ward for a while and come to the meetings. And then they let me back. And I'm so grateful that they did that. It took me a while to see my alcoholism. My mom said, I told her, I said, I think this is going to work for the drugs, Mom. But, you know, I don't have a problem with alcohol, because it was terrifying thinking about giving everything up. So I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in this program, and I'm starting to feel like a fraud because I'm starting to have some hope that you guys have an answer for me, a solution, and that I'm not really an alcoholic, but willing to say I am, because, you know, I want to be here now. I want to be here. There's some hope. And I go to this meeting. I'm still, like, they could take us out to meetings from the rehab, and I go to this meeting in Malibu that had, like, seriously over 300 people there, right? And I walk in, and this guy, Jim, comes up to me, first, like, comes up and says, thank God you made it here. And this is the guy that worked at the liquor store around the corner from my house, right? He never saw the rest of it. He just saw me come in and pretend like I was going to have a party and pick some wine and, you know, I would do. And he didn't even see all of it because I shopped around, you know. And you know, oh, and throw a bottle of tequila in because, you know, I like tequila, whatever. Like, so it was like all the way up to that meeting, I was really in the dilemma about, do I get to stay here, you know? And then to walk into that huge meeting and have somebody, you know, him at the door say, thank God you made it here, you know? And I got to see, like, I am an alcoholic, and this is my program, you know? I went in a halfway house from that rehab. First of all, that halfway house was saved my life. And the counselor, when I was leaving the rehab, he said, you need to go to this 10-month program in Pasadena, or at least go to this halfway house, right? Another smart guy. He didn't say you need to go to a halfway house. He said, like, big thing, big commitment, right? Or this one that looked a little more manageable, which, of course, I took. But then that meant I didn't go home, right? Which I wouldn't have made it if I went home. I wanted my kids home really bad. They're 5 now. And they're in Maui with their dad's family. That was probably one of my first spiritual experiences. I miss those kids so bad. But I could hear everybody was telling me I needed to get a foundation under me first, you know, or I wasn't going to make it and I was going to lose everything. And I was able to hear that. And the first time when I said, God, help me do this thing the way that I need to do it. And I got a little bit of ease and enough space to keep going until it was time for them to come home. That thing that I heard 10 years ago in that first rehab when I was in this one, it was like it hit me. Like, this is what that guy was talking about here. It's like 10 years to the day almost, right? Coming off another run with heroin, I have hepatitis again, I'm celebrating my 27th birthday in rehab, you know, like everything was so the same. And so I thought, like, what, I got it, you know, that people talk about that connection from our head to our heart. That was in case I hadn't got sober yet, just in case. So I heard it. I got it's never going to go anywhere else for me. You know, and I had a lot of times in early sobriety where my head was just telling me, you might as well drink, you know you're going to. You know, that was the disease in there that would just say, you might as well drink because you know you're going to. Because how many times before I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm like, I'm not going to drink today. I'd be so hungover. And by the afternoon, that motor's humming. It's looking like a good idea again, you know, over and over and over. And, I mean, one night I tried cutting my wrists. I hadn't heard about Alcoholics Anonymous yet, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know a way out, you know. And some of us, I think, do die that way because we haven't heard the hope yet, you know. So it's so great to see all these new people here, all those people that took chips, you know, because this thing really works. It changes our life. So in that halfway house, we had some things they had us do. We had to make an AA call every day. We had certain meetings we had to go to. We had to get a sponsor. Those were the beginning things there. And that it's Felicity House in Palms in Southern California. It's still going strong. I mean, it was an awesome, because not all halfway houses are, you know. It was a good, solid house, and it still is. And it was so great to get to have that time with other people who were starting out like me. And you couldn't sleep, and you go down in the kitchen in the middle of the night. Somebody else can't sleep either, and you get to talk about recovery. I heard things like, don't drink no matter what. Are you willing to go to any lengths? Right? And for me, you know, it got down to any lengths was, even when I absolutely felt like I had to drink. That wasn't any length. I don't drink no matter what. And I can remember one night having the obsession. I had the obsession for a long time. So bad, and I just went to bed. I just went to bed safe, right? And I woke up in the morning, and I hadn't drank, and it hit me like I have a choice again today, right? Because if I had drank, I would have had a drink again. You know what I mean? Like, I have this window of opportunity that is precious to me. I don't know if I'll get another chance. I did my first four step there with Patty, a friend of mine named Patty P, who was maybe a couple months more than me. I mean, we had no friggin' idea what we were doing, but we were all in. You know what I mean? We were all in. And we went to the marinas. They had a meeting at like 6:15 or 6:45 Marina Center meeting we would go to, and they said a prayer. We must have missed the beginning of the meeting the first time, but we ran home, and, you know, it was a seven-step prayer. Went home and looked it up and memorized it, so we were all ready the next day when we went. And then they actually opened the meeting with the third-step prayer. So then, you know, like, but it's just that being... just doing whatever was suggested. I was told to get a commitment, so it was like making coffee or back then cleaning ashtrays. Whatever was suggested. We went to coffee after the meeting. Say, okay, you know. I met my husband, who has a couple more years than me, when I was in that halfway house. I was working the Felicity House. They had Saturday night dances in Santa Monica, and for people to see that there is life after recovery, we can have fun, get out there and dance, we can, you know, and I was selling sodas for the house, and he was out on the dance floor having the time of his life, and, you know, I'm the one that, with one girlfriend in the room, dances behind the high back chair. So self-conscious, right? And watching that. Him and his brother had this big mirror in their apartment, and they would practice their moves in front of the mirror. And I would be sitting on the couch going, oh my God, they're letting people see them. You know, it was such a revelation. But, and I know we're told don't get in a relationship in the first year. Right, and I understand why that is because we need to have our sobriety be our primary focus. His sobriety was first for him, and my sobriety, we were both very serious about being sober. And I sort of married into this sober family. And so I was surrounded by people. Some of them are here. This is my sister in sobriety. And our husbands, our ex-husband, she's still my sister. So it's really great to be out here and get to see her and my niece. Been through a lot of things over the years, you know. And we get to do that when we're sober. We get to be present and show up for people, and we get to learn and change. So there's just a lot of stuff. Dancing. I can dance now. I don't really care. And plus, when you hit a certain age, you don't really care anymore. It's freedom, you know. I just came from Los Angeles this morning. I've been going down there the last couple weeks to take care of my grandson. He's six, one of those twins that I had. It's his boy. And his mom is back in Montreal with her dad, who just passed away yesterday. And so I get to show up and be one among. You know, my kids want me in their life. I get relationships with those kids, the grandkids. I would have missed, you know, if I'd been successful that time in the bathtub or that time I cut my wrists, like, I would have missed so much, and I had no idea, you know. We had a loss. We had a you know, life happens. It's, you know, life happens in sobriety. And let me just say, so when I'm 6 months sober, my kids are home. I have a commitment at a meeting, right? I'm taking the coffee pot out to my van to after the meeting. I'm calling people. I have a sponsor who, you know, I'll talk about sponsorship in a minute, but and I feel like drinking. And I didn't know how to tell somebody. I really thought that I was doing it wrong, that I felt like that. You know, I didn't know that we're alcoholic, and sometimes we feel like that, and we just have to talk about it and look at it and tell somebody. I didn't know how to tell anybody, and I was too ashamed to take my kids to the liquor store. They had just come home, but I had the obsession to drink really bad, and I went back. I was staying at my dad's house and ransacked his house. Usually there was alcohol in there, and there wasn't this time. All I could find was cough syrup, which did not take the edge off. But I really got to see the ism, the mental obsession. I got to see the craziness of our disease without it taking me out, because I didn't get any of the relief, you know. And so I ended up starting my time over. I had 6 months at that time, and it was a big thing, because I'm like, is it really like a slip, you know? And then the thinking about, well, if I have to start my time over, then maybe I should just go out and really drink, right, or whatever. But I didn't want to take it's really important that we, I think, for me, it was really important that I have a solid foundation. And so I made that decision to start my time over. You know, and I mean, it's a big, heavy decision and whatever. And then already my head is composing my next 6 month acceptance speech, right, of my chip. So, you know, we're all over the place, or I am. I'm all over the place. I'll speak for myself. Going along, we moved to Colorado about 21 years ago, and it was such a good experience for me to be out. You know, it says in our book we're sensitive people, and I always use that like a joke, like, yeah, oh, we're sensitive people, right? I am sensitive. I'm sensitive to light, to noise, to crowds, to texture, you know what I mean? I'm like, and so moving to Colorado was this space, and I got to feel that. The nature, I mean, it was really good to see kind of where I was. And it was a really small community. There wasn't a lot of AA there. I think, like, Sandra's family opened a meeting. My other sister-in-law and brother-in-law, Deb and Stace, opened a meeting. Rich and I opened a meeting. Our friends from Louisiana opened a meeting, you know. It was like a few of us that had come in, and so it was really a special thing to get to participate in AA growing there, you know. Sandra and I used to take carloads of women to the speaker meetings in Colorado Springs and show them, you know, take them to, we went to a Valentine's Day dance once, and people's eyes were just like, whoa, because they'd only seen meetings where there was like six people or eight people, and they see a room full of us. That's a powerful experience, you know. Anyways, a lot of growing and a lot of changing. About a few years ago, I'd gotten pretty comfortable in my sobriety, right? I've gotten pretty comfortable. I'm in a sober family. I'm not really having to work too hard. And back on the thing with sponsorship, I've always had this sense of inadequacy about being sponsored. I had several sponsored. I'd done fifth steps with several different people. I'd work the step, you know, I read, I dug at myself, I tried to be brutally honest, whatever. I had a sponsor that one time I said, I feel like all she told me was just go to a meeting and don't drink. Like, that was like it, kind of. And finally I said, I feel like you don't know what I'm talking about. She said, I don't. right? So if you have a sponsor like that, get a new sponsor. Get somebody who's going to help you. Because I read that book and I picked up on things that were like, you know, we must be hard on ourselves, never on others. And I took that hard on myself as a means of beating myself up, which kept me in that self-centeredness, kept me in fear and inadequacy. I had a sponsor who drank right after I did a fifth step with her. I don't know what, you know. I had a couple who moved, you know what I mean? And then as you're sober for a while, they're not taking you in like a newcomer anymore. You've been sober 8 years now, or you've been, you know what I mean? And so I've always sort of had this inadequacy around that. And I've sponsored other women to the best of my ability, but you know, you can't do what you do what you know how to do. And a few years ago, I was at a place where I thought maybe I'm not going to come to AA anymore. Not that I have any illusions about being an alcoholic. Not that I want to abandon the spiritual principles or the tools that I've learned here. But I felt uncomfortable because I felt like I didn't want to take somebody through the steps the way that I knew how to do it. I felt like I needed something else. And I had a good friend that I actually sponsored when she came in, and she took me through the steps again. But it was like on the fence, right? And I thought, you know, you hear people when they have 30 years going out, like, what the heck? How does that happen? You know, I don't want to be one of them. And so we went through the steps again, and it was really an awesome experience. And like right after that, we ended up in California. I'm like, I don't know what happened. It's like all this stuff opened up, and then here we are in California. We moved out here to be with my dad, who's getting up there and is on his own, kind of getting a divorce, and he's on his own and whatever. And because it's a good location for us, it's close to our kids, our grandkids. My mom lives up north of us. And we were just looking for some different things in our life. But I really feel like that going through those steps again, just, I don't know, all the doors opened. And so we're out here. And it's been a really big year for us. I'm really having to work, you know. I'm really having to work just for today. And I'm really seeing the gifts from doing that work. I haven't had a great relationship with my dad all the time, and I'm learning about not taking things personally. I'm learning to just live and let live. I'm doing all these things but I'm getting to practice them every day. And I'm having to get, I'm going to more meetings than I was going to, you know, and so I'm really getting to see a clear picture between that taking an action and the result. I'm also, this thing I said about depression was, it is something that I've struggled with, and I know I'm not alone, you know. And for a long time, what I did is, I'm kind of into judgment and shame. Like, those are tools I use to beat myself up, or weapons. And so if I was having a hard time with anything, I must not be doing it right. You know, I just must not be doing it right if life was difficult. And that's not always the case, you know. We have a lot of tools, but one of the tools is talking about it when it's rough. You know, we share that with another person. We're honest. We get to a meeting. We read the book. We say our prayers. There's things that we can do, but to let go of that part that if I was just doing it right, everybody would be okay. Not only me. It's like, you know, if I was only better, different, more, everybody would be okay. You know, and so a lot has changed with that, and I'm really grateful because that's something that just really got in my way of me being of any value to anybody. Oh, God. I feel like I haven't really It just feels like I haven't quite said what I want to say. I guess I just think for new people, when we come in, like, just stay, you know? I have a friend who's lost two daughters to this disease, you know? That's what happens, too. You know, the ripple effect, you know, the ripple effect of, I'm so grateful these couple guys over here nod every once in a while, and it's like, I mean, truthfully, there's not very many women in this room, and that kind of freaked me out at first, right? I go to a lot of women's meetings, and they know about mother guilt and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, does anybody remember where I was at? yeah. I think, how about step two, you know? Because I think I really got step one, you know? I got that when I was in rehab and I saw I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. Step two was something that I've had to return to a lot because I thought I just had to work really hard. And I didn't believe God would do it for me, you know? I just had to really, so basically I was handing out God's, his job and my job, right? But I'm running the show. And so that trust thing has been slow for me to come to really believing that God could restore me and would restore me to sanity. And when I look back at where I started from, that scared kid, you know, that was kind of bent on killing herself, to where I am today, and I'm of service to my father. I'm a good wife. I'm a good grandma. I'm a good mom. I'm a good friend. Those are all gifts of this program. You know, I've learned by watching people here. I have things, one of my other sister-in-laws, I was pregnant with a baby. I was 8 months pregnant and the baby, died. And, was devastated. We had moved back, so I wasn't doing this long commute. I had these friends in my life again. You know, my older kids were happy about the baby coming. I was like I had let this great sigh of relief, right, that everything's going to be okay now. And she died. And one of my sister-in-laws, like, I think my mom didn't even want to come to the hospital. I still had to give birth, right? My mom didn't even want to come to the hospital because that's where my family comes from. And this friend jumped on an airplane and came out uninvited to be with me. So I learned about showing up, you know? And then I got to show up for other people that way, that it's okay to show up. And, you know, and I can remember telling her, I feel like I have to go all the way down before I can come back with the grief. And she said, it's okay. You know, I'm here. It's okay. You know, so she gave me permission to do what I needed to do in safety. You know, and so we help each other with those things. We help each other learn how to be people that can show up for each other, you know, that can respond to life. Yeah, I've learned an awful lot of things here from people, and I'm still learning, you know. It's really, I feel like the older I get in sobriety, it's clearer and clearer that it's one day at a time. How am I going to do it today? You know, I get up in the morning, I like to read page 86 and 87 and say, on awakening, I think about the 24 hours ahead and I ask God to direct my thinking. And sometimes I feel connected to that and sometimes I don't, but that's okay. I just do the action. You know, sometimes I read this book and everything in it is like, bingo, me, me, me. Other times I read it, it's just words on the page. That's okay. You know, I always thought something was wrong if I wasn't feeling a certain way. But it's just keep taking those actions. Did some service work when we were in Colorado. Did the women's jail meeting there, which was really an awesome experience. You would hear these women come in and sit down at the table and declare, "I'm not alcoholic," and then proceed to tell you about their alcoholism. You know? And it reminded me of where I came from, you know, and that you can just hold the door open. You can keep holding the door open and saying, "We have a solution for you. There's hope. You can have a different life," you know. Yeah, my life today is really good, you know. It's really good day by day. It's not without challenges, but I keep figuring it out. And I was really nervous about coming up here. I'm really glad that this is like we're coming to a close here. You guys might be too. You know, but it's like that's what we do. We show up. We show up, and it's about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not really about me. But there's like you want to say how great it is because you want everybody to get it, you know. You want people to stay. It doesn't get any better out there. I believe that. I've seen people come and go, and I've seen people that have really struggled to get back, you know. And I'm afraid that would be me. Like, I got this window of opportunity. I'm holding on to it. I think it's at 5 till that I was supposed to wrap it up. Look at this. We're all here because we were like a mess, right? Our lives weren't working. Depression, like relationship problems, job problems, living, you know? And we just, that was something else they told me, like, when I, because all of that, you know, the train catches up with us when we stop, right? And it's like, whoa, this is, seems like things are getting worse. But people told me, just keep focusing on the steps. Just keep focusing on your program. And so much of that other stuff falls away, or a solution presents itself, or whatever. So just like, just keep on the program, you know, and that other stuff will get sorted out. Get a sponsor that you talk to. Get a service commitment. Read the literature, say your prayers, and don't drink no matter what. Thanks.